Welcome to the Eat, Train, Prosper podcast, where we provide you sustainable training principles for strength and building muscle, effective nutrition practices for improving and maintaining a lean physique, and practical lifestyle habits for becoming a champion of your own health, both inside and out. Hosted by Aaron Straker and Brian Borstein. What is going on, guys? It's another Tuesday, which means we have a fresh episode of Eat, Train, Prosper. Today, we're going to get into the details about different training splits and how you can find which split may be best for your current situation and schedule. Before we dive into this, Brian, what is the latest with you?
Just finished deload week. Feeling good. Really needed it. It had been, I did the math, I went back, and it was actually 9 weeks. It was 7 microcycles. So 9 weeks that I made it without a deload week, which is for sure the longest I've made it since I began taking deload weeks. So that's really cool. I felt fantastic in my, first two sessions. And then yesterday was a rest day, felt great there as well. Supposed to train upper body today, but life is nuts, man. I woke up in three times in the middle of the night. My perfect sleeping baby decided not to sleep perfectly last night. Had teething issues, trying to learn to walk. There's just a lot going on with this 14-month-old. So she's struggling a little bit, and I didn't sleep great. And then I wanted to hit this session first thing when I got back from dropping Bryson off at school, but the baby didn't want to take her nap either. So I was up with her this morning before this podcast, and now I may or may not get my upper body session in after we get off here. And if not, I'll just push it to the next day. But something super cool that's happening this Thursday, and kind of one of the reasons I want to do upper body today, because my plan was to make Thursday a rest day, is I am going to do a session with N1 Education. Do you follow those guys?
Hell yeah.
So I knew that they were around, you know, the Denver, Colorado area, and I thought they were in downtown Denver for some reason. But I just found out relatively recently that their gym is in Longmont, which is 15 or 20 minutes from me. So I contacted them last week and set up a session for Thursday. And instead of it being like a session where I actually do a workout and they watch me, I want it to be a rest day, because I want to go in there and I just want to like kind of go through different movement patterns and have them see the way that I perform movement and have them be able to kind of give me some corrections to optimize movement patterns. Specifically like the lat stuff for upper body, because I know that they specialize in that. And then I also want to go over some hip hinging stuff, because I'm aware of the kind of posterior pelvic tilt and all the different changes that you can do within your midline to kind of prioritize glute versus hamstring when you're doing a hip hinge. But I'd love to have somebody kind of hands-on and be like, okay, see the way that your back is here, or what your pelvis is doing in this position, this is going to bias the glute more through this portion of the movement. And then maybe if I go into slight anterior pelvic tilt or neutral, then maybe we bias a little bit more hamstring. So there's just a number of kind of different things that I want to pick their brains on. And then the dude also told me that when they do tests in their lab, he's like, yeah, we're always looking for people that are trained, locally to come in, and, you know, we'll put electrodes on you and run you through tests and all that stuff. So I'm pretty amped with this connection and excited for Thursday.
Yeah, that is something that I know both of us are giving a lot more time and I guess energy into more recently, is really refining our movement patterns. And okay, instead of just like, here's the exercise, perform it, it's like, okay, here's the exercise, what is our target intention for this exercise? I want to perform it optimally so I can get the most, basically, hypertrophy and stimulus is the main reason, you know, we're doing a lot these days out of it. And I would say of the past year, maybe like 18 months, that has been, I mean, like so many light bulb going off moments, like these movements that I just didn't like, you know, for years and years, I just performed poorly and never learned how to like adjust the machine to my levers and biomechanics and stuff. And I mean, it has just been, I feel like dumb kind of just like wasting, you know, I'm using air quotes here, like so many years of training by just maybe getting 85% out of what I was doing. Just because I never spent like 20 minutes one day figuring out how to like, okay, if I change this, if I move that foot angle here, if I elevate my heel a little bit, it's like a pain-free movement. It's just been like I said, so many light bulb moments have gone off for me in the past year just with that. So it's super cool you're taking the time to learn more from them.
Yeah, I think that for me, kind of similar to what you said, is the biggest effect of kind of focusing more on movement is that the fatigue cost for each rep and each set is so much lower because the stimulus is so much more targeted. I'm not using my entire body to lift movements, right? It's like when I'm rowing, it's literally the process of driving my elbow back toward my waist, et cetera. So I think that's been huge. And it's exactly kind of what you're saying where, you know, shifting into that heels elevated squat position or putting the feet in a certain way allows you to hit the quad harder, but you're probably using significantly less total load. And therefore the fatigue cost on your midline and, you know, all the axial loading and all that is much lower. And then with that said, I will say though, there is something weird in that Isratel uses the term raw stimulus magnitude to define like just how disruptive a movement is.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have something just like a heavily loaded, like low bar back squat or like a bent over row where you're using like a little bit of momentum or something like that, there is something about those movements that are just more stimulative and they come with a massively higher fatigue cost. So we don't tend to utilize them as much, but it does have me thinking sometimes if maybe there's room for like some of that in my program, like in the sense that like, there's just something about a bent over row of where your body is having to brace and keep from breaking in half as you row, that it just seems to be and feel a little bit more stimulative than putting your chest on a chest supported T-bar row, which I love. Like chest supported T-bar row is like my favorite back movement, but there's just something about just through the entire back, like you just feel your erectors and your rhomboids and your lats and like the whole thing just forcing yourself not to just drop that bar and tear in half, you know? So I don't know. I've been kind of messing around with that in my head a little bit and I don't necessarily think I'm going to implement it in that way, but it's been a long time since I've done a heavy bent over barbell row. So it kind of makes me think like maybe I shouldn't be scared of doing heavy bent over barbell rows maybe.
Yeah. I know what you're saying. There is something to say about really just getting after it, right? If I think the problem is when you find yourself in these extremes, right? Or I'm only going to use like slow, really controlled movement that is really isolated, and you can kind of course, your loads are going to be much lighter because of that, because it's your form is so strict. But there is something I think to be said about just like training hard, right? Doing heavy bent over rows, knowing that your form isn't like textbook, but it's that particular exercises, you know, like role in your training day isn't to be textbook. It's to like mm-hmm. get after it and really put a high effort into.
And we built the majority of our physiques training in that manner. So, yes. Like I think to the average person looking from the outside who doesn't have that like physique eye, you know, they would look at us in 2015 and they would look at us now and they'd be like, where's the fucking change? Like you guys are the same thing. What is this, all this nuance that you're babbling about all the time, mm-hmm. you know, but to somebody with an acute eye, they can see that things are different.
Agreed. And I think, I mean, that's the nature of when you've been training for, you know, 15 plus years, 20 plus years, like yourself and still natural, you're not packing on 10 pounds of muscle in 2 years and stuff anymore. Right. It's not how that game goes. Cool.
What's with going on with you, man? I know that you got a sweet hack squat machine at your new Austin spot.
Yeah, so the new gym is really cool. It's just the vibes and environment are like really, really good. And I was thinking, like, it's been a long time, like since like, you know, like the PB days, like when you and AV owned the gym, where it was just like a very fun and very motivating environment to train in. And since we've been traveling it, I really haven't found that. I've been in, you know, different types of Globo gyms or things, but like this place is awesome. It's like a big warehouse style gym, graffiti everywhere. They're just like pumping 21 Savage and stuff like that in the gym. So it's a very motivating environment to train in. The equipment isn't like, if there are parts that I wish I could change, you know, but it's kind of like, okay, this is going to make do, but the hack squat I'll be able to configure really, really well. That was my first run on it. I need to set the foot plate angle a little less steep so I can get into a more dorsiflex position, keep my heels completely planted, but for like, you know, a first run, really, really good. I'm excited. We've been in Austin here now, like 9 days, I think. We were kind of set up in the gym, purchased a car, riding dirty a little bit right now because of how COVID times, you can't just like show up to the DMV. So you had to schedule an appointment, and the first one wasn't for like 3 weeks. So don't have it registered yet. I'm just kind of riding dirty, but I don't have a choice. Like I called and I was like, well, what do you want me to do? And she's like, no, just drive it. And I was like, all right, well, you don't have to tell me twice. So, everything's going really good. Happy to be back in the States and access to the grocery store. It's been just so much easier to hit my macros because they're just like these, all these little optimizations, like the little simplest one, cream of rice. It's a very simple way to get high amounts of carbohydrate in that will digest simply, easily. So that's been like a game changer. A grill. Oh my goodness. I've missed a grill so much because I can just, you know, cook so much of my food. My daily or my weekly protein on a grill really easily. You know, before I had a 12-inch pan and one burner on the stove, and that when you're making 4 or 5 pounds of protein, that's a 70-minute ordeal of like, okay, this one's done, out, next one's seasoned in, and it's just like really time consuming and a pain in the ass. So the grill's been really awesome,
and it tastes better.
And it tastes better, yeah. So it's been really awesome so far being back. But I mean, who knows how long it'll last. I'm sure I'll get sick of it in 2 or 3 months and then we'll be back somewhere in the world.
Cool, man. Well, cool. That's you all ready to good.
Dig into these topics?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Cool. So kind of set it up. Like I briefly mentioned in the beginning, we're talking about training splits. And for anyone who really maybe isn't familiar with the more common different types of training splits, I'm going to run through I would say like the five most common that we have kind of found. So your traditional bro split, right? Coming from like your old school bodybuilding days, meaning training each muscle once per week, kind of like Monday being International Chest Day. And then maybe Tuesday would be back day or legs, and then kind of splitting it up from there. An upper lower training split generally is performed like four times per week, but could go up to six, where you do like all of upper body one day, all of lower body the next day, and then so on and so forth. Another very common popular split is push-pull legs. You repeat that twice per week. So it's a 6 day per week training program generally. So you push-pull legs, or you can do legs, push-pull, very similar there. Another less common training split, but this is one that I am a particular fan of, is upper lower push pull legs. So you then go through a 5 day training split. So you'd go like upper lower and then a push, a pull legs, all adding up to 5 days total training per week. And then full body. Full body is really interesting as it is a great way for kind of, you can use a similar or this full body training split, but then you can increase or decrease volume based on your schedule, which is something we're going to talk a lot about in today's episode. You can go anywhere from like a three times per week, which is very common for beginners, or up to like five or six, and modulating your volume in that regard. So let's start off with the the full body split. Brian, why don't you take us a little bit deeper here?
Yeah, totally. Before I get into that, though, all of the examples that Aaron provided, he sort of laid them out as if they're on like the Gregorian calendar, right? The 7 day calendar. And I think that it's really important to understand that that is very unnecessary. And in many ways, it's like super limiting. So like my current routine, I'm going upper, lower rest, upper, lower rest, upper, lower rest, upper, lower rest. That's my ideal. Like sometimes life gets in the way and whatever, but, the cool thing about not being reliant on the calendar is that if I get thrown off, I don't feel this pressure to have to fit it in, or else, you know, all of next week's going to be screwed up too. So I actually encourage the majority of my clients to operate outside of the calendar week, because it allows you to listen to the signals that your body is sending, take rest days when you need to, and it allows us a lot more freedom when we design our training routines to make sure that we're hitting goal number one when it comes to training split design. and I will get back to you. That's my little teaser right there. Goal number one of training program design is coming up. But first, full body training. So full body training, like Aaron said, can be 2 or 3 times a week, all the way up to 6 or 7 times a week. On the extreme examples, when I first started training, and what a lot of the kind of HIIT or hard gainer proponents promote is the idea of 2 or maybe 3 full body sessions. And these are very different than the way that you would see full body sessions take place in the context of trying to hit evidence-based volume recommendations. So the four to six times a week full body is going to make it much, much easier to hit those evidence-based volume recommendations of like 10 to 20 sets per week per muscle group range. But in these kind of 2 or 3 times a week full body programs, the key is intensity. So you're picking big compound movements. You don't have time for fluff stuff. You don't have time really to focus much on the arms. You're just getting in and you're hitting your push, your pull, and your leg or hip movement, and maybe one additional movement. So think of a day that might look like bench press, bent over row, squat, and dip or barbell curl or something like that, right? So you have 4 big movements. That's your day. Then you go home, you rest 2 or 3 days. You come back and you hit 3 or 4 different movements super hard, and you go home, you rest 3 or 4 days and do it again. That's more of like the HIIT or hard gainer approach to full body, and also the way that I began training. And I think it was a perfect way for me to begin training because it put focus on the compound movements and taught me how to work hard. In the new version of full body training, the idea is to use full body as a way, as a frequency tool to split the volume that you need. So if you know that you need 15 sets of chest a week to make gains, and you have 5 full body sessions, then you would put 3 sets of chest in each of those sessions. The same applies to pretty much all the other muscle groups too. I went through a full body training cycle, and I learned a lot from it. I actually wrote a really long, in-depth Instagram post on this. I think it was last fall of 2019, fall or winter of 2019, right before the COVID stuff all hit. I did the full body thing. And a couple things I did wrong. When you're training a muscle group 5 times a week, you actually really can't push close to failure. At least you can't in the beginning sessions. Like, you need to give your body many weeks to kind of adapt to this like new crazy frequency that you're throwing at it. Because what I did is I was like, okay, well, I still am doing 15 sets of chest a week. That's the number that I need to hit. And I was doing these to 1 to 2 RIR. So I need to continue doing these to 1 to 2 RIR, or else I'm doing less effective volume. But what that did was it made me constantly fatigued and sore. And after about 3 weeks, especially on leg movements, I was really starting to see it difficult to even match progress. Like, mentally, the thought of going into the gym and having to hit legs 5 times a week was like just brutal. Which is funny because that's actually the antagonist argument to people like that love full body training. They're like, oh, the best thing is you never have to have a leg day. But the way I look at it is every day is fucking leg day. Every day I'm doing something miserable and it hurts. So for my mentality, that wasn't good. I don't know if it would have been different if maybe I would have kept my RIRs at like 3 or 4 for the first couple weeks, like I'm suggesting you guys do, and then kind of progressively worked up into lower RIRs. But that time that I did that, it definitely was not a good decision the way I implemented it. So RIR needs to be a little bit further from failure. I would also even recommend starting on the lower dose of your volume needs, because 15 sets a week, if that's what you do for quad, say, like the way that you organize your leg training within the week, you really can't hit quads 5 days a week and you can't hit hamstrings 5 days a week. When you're doing a full body training, it almost ends up being like, you have like a compound quad movement on one day, and then you have like an isolation hamstring movement the next day. Then you have like an isolation quad movement the next day, then a compound hamstring movement the next day. So you're really only hitting quads, you know, 2 to 3 times a week, and hamstrings 2 to 3 times a week. It's difficult for me to see a situation where somebody's working their legs with any real intensity, and yet they're still able to come back the next day and hit that same portion of their leg again, even if you're doing a back squat one day and then coming in and doing a leg extension the next day. I just don't see that as super viable. What do you think about that, Aaron?
Yeah. So admittedly, the full body has been something I haven't done in a very, very long time, like except maybe like in high school is probably the last time I did some of that. And that was when we were training like a lower frequency because we were, you know, in sport season or something like that. It is definitely, I think, something from a programming standpoint is more easy to mess up because there's, or I don't want to say mess up, but you don't have the luxury of the like, of the rest days, right? Which will help pad that. What you kind of were alluding to later on was like, yeah, I don't think you're coming in like, okay, Monday, hack squats, Tuesday, leg extensions, you know, Wednesday, leg press or something like that. If you, because there's like, let's say you bust your ass on Monday on those hack squats, you're going to impair your performance on the leg extension the next day. And then from that standpoint, like your week just kind of starts sliding. From what I have seen, kind of what you were saying, like, yeah, people will kind of, you'll have like your leg exercise each or like every other day kind of flops between like hamstring or quad or some sort of like hip driven movement to just to sneak in a little bit of extra recovery per each big body part. I think some of the like the lower body makes a lot more sense in that regard. Chest, I would agree with as well. Some of the other ones can be a little bit different. Like let's say shoulders, you could do like a, you know, a more anterior type pressing movement, and then you move to like a lateral type, and then like a rear delt or something like that. And you could kind of circulate in that regard, but the legs are harder because they're so massive.
The funny thing about that setup though, is that then when you actually break it down, like one person could be like, oh, I'm doing full body because like rear delts and anterior delts are both delts. But like somebody else could look at that same split and be like, okay, so you're doing quads on this day and you're pairing that with like anterior delts and, you know, chest. And then on the other day you're doing hamstrings and you're pairing that with back and rear delts or whatever. So to some one person, your program looks like a split, and the other person, it just looks like a full body program.
It is a little bit subjective. I could see in that regard to do like a true full body, you know, like everything. Mm-hmm. I think maybe 4 days per week max. Maybe.
I feel like I would need a rest day between each day, like just knowing my body and like the effort I put into it.
Yeah. And those training sessions would be long as hell just by the sheer amount of exercises you have to do to hit the different, you know, muscle groups.
So, you know, Menno Henselmans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's known for working out pretty much every day, full body. He's seven days a week, full body all the time. He doesn't take days off. And he does 1 to 2 sets per muscle group, and he hits every muscle group every day. And his sessions are like 60 minutes long. And he's getting, you know, 10 to 14 sets per muscle group per week. And he just chugs along and does it every day.
That I could see. I mean, when you, because you save a lot of time, then not taking as long of rest periods, right? If you're only doing like one set of chest, you could take just the time it takes you to move over to the back, you know, whatever machine or movement you're using, and start going again. So that does make, you know, a lot more sense if you move down into like 1 to 2 sets as opposed to like maybe a traditional 3 or something like that.
I still argue that it doesn't make sense. And here's why. I think you'll agree with me. How many sets does it take you to work up to a set of 6 to 8 on the back squat?
Probably 4.
How many sets does it take you to work up to a set of 6 to 8 on the bench press?
What was it? A set of what?
6 to 8 on the bench press.
Oh, that I feel comfortable making bigger jumps because I feel like I don't have to like, it's not as more detailed of like an execution thing for me. So I would say probably like 3 max.
Right. So then we have a back movement and you have to build up to that movement. And then we have lateral raises and you need to at least do like 1 prep set before your lateral raises. Right. So, I mean, even if you count the main sets and say you're like, okay, I'm doing 7 to 10 work sets this workout with ramp up sets. And the fact that every movement is different, like when you go back squat to leg press, you could probably do leg press in 1 or 2 build up sets, or, you know, back squat to hack squat or back squat to leg extension or whatever, because you're already working legs. Back squat to chest has no correlation. Your chest needs to be warmed up like it's fresh again. Your back needs to be warmed up like it's the first movement. Every time you're warming up like it's the first exercise that you're doing. And that's nuts.
I mean, yeah, I agree 100%. It that does seem very superfluous to me to do everything every single day. I personally don't think I would want to train in that way. But I mean, to each their own. Well, Menno is very historically, Menno is very different is the word that comes to mind. Like kind of like everyone says left, Menno says right. it's a type of deal. But nothing seems like ever to my, in my opinion, right? Nothing he says ever seems like outlandish by any means. It's just,
no, totally. It's all evidence based. Kind of
different. Yeah. From what other people will find.
Yeah, no. And I love that. I love that he'll kind of push Israetel and Helms and those guys and take that kind of contrarian approach to things. So super cool. All right. So that's full body. Those are my thoughts on it. I do think to conclude that for people that are relatively early in their training journey, it makes a lot of sense to do a full body program because I had success with it. and because I've seen, you know, that being able to train movement patterns with higher frequencies and training muscles with higher frequencies when you're first starting just helps the whole neural learning process, which is all positive. So this kind of brings me to the one main point about training splits, and that is that you want to train a muscle group when it's recovered and avoid a long period of time from when it's recovered to the point where you train it again. So that's like my kind of golden number one rule when it comes to designing training splits. And the thing is that most people aren't going to fit perfectly with that model into like a push-pull legs or an upper lower or a full body or whatever. Because all muscle groups kind of recover at a little bit different times for each person. I would say that that's especially true if you're like a special snowflake. But most people can maneuver their program in such a manner that they can make a PPL or an upper lower work by manipulating volume. But I'll get to that a little bit later. So when we look at a bro split specifically, and we're thinking about what I just said above about training a muscle once it's recovered, you would have to do so much damage to your body to warrant needing an entire week of time before you train that muscle again. I mean, you would have to mash your legs so hard that you were sore for 4 or 5 days, and then they're barely just clearing in soreness by the time that, you know, Tuesday rolls around again or whatever. And that just isn't productive. I mean, we've talked about, you know, how too much muscle damage actually eats into recovery resources. So that person that is confident that training each muscle group once a week is the best route for them, and they want to just take it to the house and get as sore as possible, they might actually find that splitting that same exact amount of volume into two sessions and putting a little bit more into each session and getting a little bit less sore and a little bit less debilitated could have some serious compounding positive effects for them down the road. Of course, there's also the other argument that, you know, the people that do the bro split, one of their big arguments is that joint fatigue and connective issues are a thing. So if you're only training a muscle once a week, regardless of the fact that I'm just destroying it to hell, I don't have to worry about, you know, doing a squat again for another 6 days. So my knees and my everything can completely heal up. And then by the time I get back to that session, I'm ready to go again. I don't fully buy into that because I think that it comes down more to the volume of work that you're doing, than it does to the rest period that you're having between that volume of work. But that's just kind of my thought on that. What do you think, dude?
I would agree with the last thing you said, especially about the connective tissue. I am not a fan of bro splits. I do not like to speak in absolutes, but I feel fairly confident saying that I will probably never do one again. I am hesitant to believe, and I believe the majority of the research also supports this as well, that once per week is just less optimal because kind of what you said, you kind of can't force hypertrophy by just like the shotgun approach. Like if you know, three exercises are great, then nine must be like even better. Like you kind of hit a point of diminishing returns, especially in a single given training session. Like when you're on your sixth chest exercise, like how effective is that exercise actually being like your chest is demolished. Like you're doing probably half of the load that you could do if you were fresh on that sixth exercise. And I'm just hesitant to believe that you are still producing effective tension and stimulus at, you know, you're now, I don't know, 20th, 18th set of that session on that same body part. And then kind of conversely, you know, even if you do demolish it, right, it's Monday. Let's say by Friday, your chest is fresh again. Are you really, is it really in your best interest to wait Friday, Saturday, and Sunday before training chest again? Probably not. And two, I think kind of with a little bit moving back to that neural type of the conversation you had, when, especially for body parts that aren't maybe some of your best, that you're not really efficient or proficient, I should say, in performing those movements, by only doing it once per week, you kind of don't have the opportunity to repeat it more frequently from, you know, a shorter gap in between to carry over any kind of improvements you've made in proficiency from the previous session. So yeah, I'm not a big fan of the traditional bro splits. I was very happy, you know, when I found out there was a different way and that it wasn't how I needed to train, because I never kind of ever liked it. I just thought it was the only thing to do.
Yeah. I, you know, all the research is pretty confident that, you know, something around 8 to 10 sets is the most like hard sets that you can do for a muscle group in a session before it just kind of turns into junk volume. And it's funny because I always felt that like in my training, I would always get to like 8 or 9 sets. And then I'd just be like, I don't feel like I'm actually training my muscle anymore. I feel like I'm just like going through the motions and everything is like so painful and pumped up. And like, specifically for chest, like it was to the point that the chest almost felt numb. And so it felt like my like shoulders and triceps were literally doing all of the work because the chest was just, it had become inactive in some way.
Yeah. So it's like, all, it's like, it's all used up.
Yeah. 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 So by maximizing your session volume at 8-ish sets or something, for me, like 8's kind of my number, as like a top end, I now sit more at like 3 to 6. But 8 as like a top end for me has been great because I can put like full focus on the movement and the execution. So I think the key message there is that everyone's individual muscular recovery may not fit perfectly into one of these pre-designed splits. And since we know that a split is an opportunity to split volume in a way that makes sense and allows you to train a muscle group when it's recovered and avoid the delay of the muscle being recovered and not training it, I want to provide you guys an example here, thinking about someone that would be following, call it an upper lower rest split, kind of like what I'm following. So this person in upper lower rest is training their legs essentially every 3 days, right? But let's assume that this person is always super recovered in their quads and maybe their hamstrings are sore. So we know hamstring volume is solid, but it's an upper lower split, right? What do we do here? So we could raise the volume of the quad work and we're like, okay, we really like this split. Like I'm just going to raise the volume of the quad work. However, like we just discussed, the quality of the work that you can put in when you raise the volume within session is going to be diminishing returns, depreciating, right? So you say you already have 6 quad sets in your day, and you're not getting sore. And so you're feeling recovered, you're improving performance, you're getting 3 days later, and your quads are like way recovered before you even get back to that session, right? Going up to 8 sets might do the trick. It might make you a little sore. It might push that boundary of recovery and fatigue. But the other side of that argument would be that those 2 sets that you're tacking on at the end, are they really effective? And might it be more effective if you kind of change that split up a little bit and maybe you have 3 quad days, but you keep your 2 ham days. So maybe quad end up getting then paired with something from your upper body and that becomes a day on its own. So now you have a day that's like quads plus rear delts and upper back or something along those lines, right? So you kind of need to maneuver through your split and decide whether is the right move to raise volume so that I can keep my training split the way it is, or might I get more out of this by kind of just abolishing this split, creating this new day, adding into this what was like a 2-day rotation of upper lower. Now it's like, call it lower upper mix, rest day, upper lower rest day, or something like that. So now it doesn't fit one of those splits at all, but it's a split that's working really well for you in that moment, right? So I think that that's kind of my big takeaway from that. What do you think about that?
Yeah. One thing that kind of comes to mind is the more advanced you get, the more opportunity there is for some of this non-traditional splits, because you kind of find imbalances and things like that with that. If you're someone who's like beginner or intermediate, more often than not, I would say if one body part kind of isn't getting sore, it's more than likely you're just not really proficient at performing the movements correctly for that body part. And like for years, that was me with my quads. And a lot of it was understanding, you know, positioning, getting my knee out over the toe, having that hamstring fold over on the calf, like full range of motion type stuff. And now that I've finally figured that out and I'm doing it, like I can crush my quads in only like 4 sets and I'm ready to go home.
Yep.
So a lot of it comes down to nuance, preference, and proper movement execution, I think.
For sure. Yeah. So I have another example for you guys of kind of how a typical split can turn into to something slightly different based on individual needs. So a program that I was doing over the summer while I was doing my cut, it was starting as a push-pull legs rest. So it was an 8-day microcycle, fit perfectly into my love of deviating from the calendar week. And so it was really strict, like push on one day, pull on the other day, and then legs on the other day. And what we realized was that I needed slightly less chest volume because the chest was a little bit high. And I also needed slightly less hamstring volume. So what we did was we cut those volumes back, but kept the same frequency. And we used the little bit of extra recovery currency that I got. And we basically ended up putting delt work on every single day, because the delts are a small muscle group that recover quickly. We didn't put them on lower day, but it was push pull legs, right? Where the push had the delt work. But now what we did is we took that extra from the hams and the chest, we took the extra recovery and we put rear delts on push day and lateral delts on pull day, so that I was literally getting both lateral and rear delts almost every upper body day. Actually, it was every upper body day. So that frequency went to 4 times a week for delts from 2. And it was all because we realized that I was doing too much volume for the chest and the hamstrings. So that's kind of one way that these things kind of happen organically, is as you're going through it, you're realizing that certain muscles are recovering a little bit better than others. You can maybe subtract some of that volume from the ones that aren't recovering as well and apply it to muscles that could handle more volume. And to be honest, like I start all of my clients, like one-on-one individual clients, start on either an upper lower or like a push-pull legs or a push-pull legs upper lower, the 5-day one that you referenced. They start on one of those three splits on like what is just a super basic program. And then through the process of receiving feedback week to week on the different kind of subjective variables that that define fatigue, we're able to determine what muscle groups are recovering, which ones aren't recovering, what we need to jack volume up on, where we need to lower volume, how we need to alter frequency. And it's completely possible that 6 or 8 weeks from starting this program, it looks completely different. But we didn't just take a program and then be like, oh, this program sucks, let's completely change everything around and start a new program. It just kind of gradually meandered its way into what looks like a different program, but is really set from the same basic program.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. I think that is what the real goal should be of everyone, right? To find something that's going to be a little bit more tailored specifically towards you, but not changing something just for the sake of like changing it up or muscle confusion or something, you know, kind of silly, but okay, based on, you know, my recovery capacity or some other things like those imbalances, like I talked about, maybe like, for example, I just generally need a lot less chest volume than everything else. One, my chest just grew really well when I was younger and I can contract it really, really well with not that much work and it grows. So I'll put that volume somewhere else. So eventually you find yourself in these kind of little nuanced differences that just kind of fall out based on historical type of stuff.
Yeah, super well said. I love the personal example of the chest. Very relevant. And then the last point I have on this, we actually have a couple Instagram questions regarding cycles or splits as well. But before we get into that real quick, I just want to point out that when you get to an advanced state and you begin instituting specialization cycles, which we've kind of discussed on here before, literally the entire purpose of the specialization cycle is to lower volume in certain muscle groups to maintenance volume, where you're not actually expecting to make gains, and then jacking up the volume on the muscle groups that you want to prioritize. And this is different than the example I just gave about my program, where we lowered down hamstring and chest volume, because we lowered down hamstring and chest volume not with the intention of getting it to maintenance volume, but with the intention of just not being sore in the next time I'm training it. So that was like a move out of necessity to lower volume. When you're doing a specialization cycle, you're lowering volume even if your muscles aren't getting sore. You're still going to lower that volume down because you literally want to do the bare minimum so that you can open up all of this extra recovery for these other muscle groups that you want to prioritize. And when you do that, that will ultimately turn into some sort of weird split with some odd frequency that probably prioritizes the muscle groups you're trying to specialize on 3 to 4 days a week, especially if it's a small muscle group like delts or biceps. And then you'll see maybe even lower frequencies for things like, say, your maintenance volume on hamstrings is, you know, 3 sets every 5 days, and you do the same thing with quads. Well, shit, now you can go destroy your upper body because you only have like 9 to 12 sets of lower body for both hamstrings and quads the entire week, right? So now you have all this extra recovery that you can just go like do all the arm work in the world and get yoked pipes. And that was all done purposefully, but your split looks nothing like a typical split would.
Exactly.
Cool. Should we move on to some questions?
Yeah, let's get into these.
All right. Where is that document?
I have the first one up if you want me to kick it over to you.
Sure, go for it.
Yeah. So the first question is, how should rest days be adjusted for different splits? And I think we kind of covered this a little bit just in the through the conversation we've had, but why don't you add any kind of additional thoughts you have on this?
Yeah, I don't actually think that there is much to add. This was the one question where I figured that when we put it in at the end here, that it probably should have already been answered. So I think that, yeah, we did that one justice. And unless you have anything else to add, I think we can probably move on to the next one.
Yeah, I really don't have much to add here. I think it really comes down to your subjective kind of recovery. So if you are not feeling recovered before training your chest again, you're probably not going to get the most as you could out of that chest session. And another thing I do want to add is more than likely your schedule will dictate where your chest days, or sorry, not your chest days, your rest days come in, especially if you have like a very demanding job, if you have a family, etc. That will generally dictate, I think more often than not.
For sure. Yeah. Next question is there a specific number of optimal reps for a given split, or is the rep range specific to the desired stimulus, i.e. strength, hypertrophy, endurance? Do you want to take a stab at this?
Yeah, I would say the latter. I think the rep range would be more specific to the desired stimulus. So for example, if you are in like, maybe your goal is like powerlifting, right? You want to increase your squat, bench, dead. I don't know how much pure endurance work you're going to be doing, like 30 plus reps, maybe just to try and flush blood. If you have like a higher training frequency for something, I'm sure there's some kind of like end range use cases that I'm just not thinking off the top of my head. But I think rep range should be more specific to desired stimulus. If your goal is strength, you're going to be doing a higher volume of lower repetition type work, unless maybe you're in a like hypertrophy block of your strength, macro cycle or something like that. But that's where I stand on it. What are your thoughts, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, a split can be for any purpose. Like you can have a split for powerlifting. You can have a split for hypertrophy. You can have a split for endurance work. So the way that you split things is just a factor of making sure that you're able to train the lift for its purpose at the highest frequency that you can. When we see in powerlifting, we see bench press often trained, bench press and squat are often trained like 3 to 4 times a week for specialty cycles. And, you know, maybe 2 times a week regularly, but you never see anyone deadlifting 3 or 4 days a week, because that's just not something that's going to keep you alive for very long. So I think that it's goal based. Like the way that you split it up is just going to depend on what your goal is. And then the reps that you perform is going to also be the way that you split it up is you can use the same splits for multiple different purposes, but the reps that you train with and the exercise selection you use are more going to define the goal. I don't know if I even said that well. It's a little bit of a confusing question.
Yeah.
What is the best split for sports performance, Aaron?
So I think probably full body, because, well, I guess I should back up. Are you in season? Are you out of season? Right? If you're in season, you might only be lifting weights 2 days per week, maybe 3 days per week, depending on your sport and like the frequency of practice and or games, right? Like, let's say it's like basketball or baseball, where you play like 2 games per week or something like that, you're just not going to have that much time. Now, I would use, you know, from my example, from when I played football, American football, we trained, I believe, twice per week, maybe 3 times per week in season. And that third day was like kind of just going through the motions. So I would generally say your full body is going to be most practical. If you're in your off season, what is the goal of the off season? Is it, maybe you need to put on weight? You're probably going to want to follow hypertrophy, a split that's more conducive to allow you the most kind of volume for your hypertrophy if you're trying to increase your weight. But, you know, I'm assuming for this question, it would probably be in season or performance based, probably more of a full body and kind of like power output type approach. What are your thoughts, Brian?
So I think for context, and I might be wrong, but I think that this guy's a basketball player. So I'm going to assume that he is, and I'm going to take it from there.
Yeah.
But I think this does apply to other sports too. So I think full body is correct, especially in season. I think that the cool feature of full body training is that you can prioritize certain muscle groups over others within that session. Which means that if you know that you're practicing daily or have a game, so you're essentially running on your legs for 2 hours, 6 days a week, which we did when I played high school basketball. You don't want to be mashing your legs constantly. So it could be that a full body program is perfect, but that you're doing mostly upper body work and then throwing in like 3 to 5 sets of lower body in there, like maybe 2 to 3 sets of squats and 2 to 3 sets of RDLs or something like that. And then that becomes the lower body work in your full body day. And then obviously around game days and stuff like that, you know, you would deprioritize leg training completely, make sure that your legs are as fresh as possible. Off season, I think whatever is going to allow you the best opportunity for hypertrophy, assuming that that's the goal, is getting bigger and stronger. If you're doing a more strength-based program, then I would look a little bit more at powerlifting as kind of a design mechanism, in doing, you know, a little bit lower effort work, working on explosiveness and execution. Maybe like the example I've used before is, you know, 6 sets of 2 at 70% or something like that. So it's not hard at all, but it's enough that you have to like focus, set up, and pull with purpose. So I think that, you know, the off season really depends on that aspect. But in season, I agree that the full body is probably the best approach.
Cool. The last question we have is, how would you structure a split if you have an injury that limits upper body? What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, the example this person provided was legs rest, question mark. So I think a little bit more detail on what is limited in the upper body would be really helpful, because we know from studies that even training one limb has positive impacts on the other limb that isn't even being trained. They've shown something like 20% improvement on a limb that literally isn't even trained just by training the other limb. So I think if that's the case and you can train one side, then by all means, I would do that. I would go like legs, upper, rest, legs rest or something like that, or maybe even do upper twice. I really think that if you can train the upper body, then it would be silly for you not to train the upper body. I also think that depending on what the injury is, there may be movements you can do. I mean, there may not be too. But if there are, if you can do any bilateral movements, like the more you can use it, the less you'll lose it. So I think that definitely prioritizing legs is a great idea. This is like such an opportunity for you to use the principles of the specialization phases that I laid out above and, you know, really jack the volume up on your legs, man. You can make it without doing much upper body. You could probably prioritize two of the three, like quads, glutes, and hams. Choose two of those and you can just go to work on those two and then put the other one on maintenance volume. That would be a really good way, would be to do quads and hams, and then the glutes are going to receive stimulus just from doing hams and quads focus, and you probably could not even train the glutes at all, and it would be maintenance volume for them, or maybe they'd even grow still. So I think that that's a great opportunity there. Do whatever upper body you can. Make sure that you're resting per the principles above to make sure that you are recovering between sessions. Adjust your volume and your intensity so that you can keep your frequency as high as reasonable without having overlapping soreness and fatigue.
Yeah. One last thing I want to add on there. This is something that I get with clients, so I thought it'd be a really helpful tidbit to add. If you have an injury, do not put yourself in a calorie deficit. You're only going to prolong the time it takes for you to heal that injury. This isn't the time to be like worried about your abs or something like that. It's a time to fix that injury. So make sure that you're feeding yourself adequately. And with that, the nice part about that is kind of what Brian was saying, like your recovery capacity is now much higher. So you're feeding enough and you're only training half your body. Like you can really hammer some legs. I would also add, it could be really good time to add in like a lot more lower back or erector work that traditionally will get kind of, not say avoided, but just put on the back burner. So, you know, your, like glute ham raises or something like that. Reverse hypers would be also really cool things that you could add just because you have more capacity to recover on more of that lower body. So, your upper body's limited or injured, grow a fat set of legs would definitely be the approach I would take.
Cool. And we had one question that is kind of silly and it's not even related to our conversation about splits, but I'm going to entertain it because we have a few minutes.
Yeah.
So Aaron, what is your favorite upper back exercise?
So I'm going to assume that upper back in this question is meaning like not specifically lat, not like a lower back, but kind of like that, you know, between the shoulder blades, like under the traps type of deal. What I really like here is the rack chins. I feel these really, just the change of the angle a little bit, it just crushes my like kind of mid upper back area. I would say that is my favorite.
That's interesting because I feel like the rack chin is much more of like a lat dominant movement, or maybe it's just in like the way that I execute it. But you know, the elbows don't pass the midline based on like the angle of your torso. The elbows kind of stop shy of passing. So you never actually get scap retraction unless you're performing the movement in such a manner as to create that.
I would say when I do it, they never. So if I'm like kind of setting it up and thinking my elbows are never kind of pulling like down, it's almost kind of like a,
they're going back a little more.
Yeah. It's like more of like a row at a different angle. I would say that's how I've kind of always performed them. And yeah, it just smokes my back, in that region. So I think it's one of those things that, I mean, like with so many exercises, how you like the, how far your feet are in front of you, how high the box is, like you can change these little angles that really dramatically change it. But I would say the rack chins are my favorite.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, Brian, what do you think your favorite is?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that it's really, this rack chin discussion is like super interesting because it really is the example of like you and I both put a lot of focus on the way that we execute movements. And yet we're talking about the same movement and being able to adjust it in such a manner very subtly that for you, it becomes an upper back movement. And for me, it becomes a lat movement just by kind of the way that the elbow travels, right? Mm-hmm. Super cool. We've discussed this before, how the elbows kind of dictate what part of the back is being worked. And if the elbows, you know, go out like a T or whatever, then, you know, follow the line of the elbow and it's going to hit more of that upper back region. Whereas when the elbows travel down toward the waistline, follow the elbows, you're going to get a little bit more of that lower lat region. So, very cool. And I think, educational for everybody, which is cool too.
Definitely.
So for me, I actually think that when I think upper back exercise, I also do not think lats. I do think that kind of similar rhomboid area in the mid back. I think back thickness.
Exactly.
And when I think thickness, my first thought is always some sort of rowing movement. Some sort of rowing movement that is probably up into more of like the sternum chest area so that it's not being driven down toward the waistline and prioritizing the lat, but that the elbow is flaring out a little bit and we're really engaging a lot of that upper back region and probably getting scapular retraction too. So for me, I think you just can't beat, like I mentioned earlier, you can't beat some sort of like heavy bent over row. I just feel that throughout my back in ways that, it's just hard to feel other movements. I just don't know if the stimulus is worth the fatigue cost, like we discussed earlier and playing around with that. So if I'm looking for a movement where I want to hit a lot of volume and I know that I say had axial loading the day before or the day after, and that would be like squatting or deadlifting or something like that, then I would not do a bent over row. I would 100% do like a chest supported T-bar row. So I think that the situation kind of dictates that, but, that's it, man. That's all I got.
Well, I have one last thing I want to add to that.
Yep.
For everyone listening, one thing I would say, so Brian mentioned obviously a heavy bent over row. Brian, would you say the percentage of people you have observed in the gym doing bent over rows is greater or less than like 80% of people doing them poorly?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the people don't do them for the purpose that they want to achieve. I think that most people don't realize that there's different ways in which you can perform a bent over row. They think that there's really just one way. So this, I'm already assuming that this person's not just completely butchering the movement and, you know, using momentum and turning it into like a humping the bar kind of thing.
Way
so yes,
heavy.
People do that for sure. But I think that even within the context of not using too much weight and not using excessive ballistic momentum, that there is a kind of misunderstanding of the way in which you row impacting the area that you want to stimulate. So I guess, yes, the answer would be, yeah, there are a ton of people fuck it up because you can fuck it up in so many different ways.
Yeah. I was kind of hinting at, I would say the majority of time I see people doing them, they're doing them way too heavy. Mm-hmm. And it becomes just like a super leg driven. And then you're not right. Rowing the bar to your chest. You're rowing your chest down to meet the bar. Cause there's too much weight on it.
Yeah. You're doing like the little like, dance move thing.
Yeah. But when you do kind of back it off and find that appropriate volume, like, you know, your barbell rows or something like that. Incredible for mid back. Yeah. I would definitely agree with that.
I have a video of me from the CrossFit days doing 5x5 bent over rows at, I want to say 255 or 265. And they're not awful. But when I look at it now, I am using some leg drive and I am getting a little bit of torso movement. I'm not like doing that twerk move, but I look at it and I am like, okay, I'm clearly causing more fatigue than I need to for the stimulus that I'm trying to provide. And now hanging out in that like 185 to even 225 range, I can keep it really strict and get like a really good stimulus. And the level of fatigue that I'm inducing is way lower.
I would agree with that 100%.
Sweet.
Cool. Anything else you want to add to cap off this episode?
No, I think it was solid. Good times.
Yeah, I think this ended up being a really, really awesome conversation topic. Hopefully you guys will pick a lot of value out of it. If you have any questions about anything, reach out to Brian or I, and we will talk to you guys next week. Thank you so much for listening to Eat, Train, Prosper. If you found this episode valuable, please subscribe or share us with your friends. You can find more from Aaron at StrakerNutritionCo.com and more from Brian at evolvedtrainingsystems.com. Talk to you guys next time.